Our next guest says that despite having relied on religion for centuries, humanity is losing its faith, and the world is becoming increasingly secular. He says that's a problem for many people, and as a result, they're left longing for something more and something deeper.
His remedy to that? Creating your own personalized religion that works for you, and that can include borrowing ideas and practices from formal religions, and finding the spiritual connections in music and literature and art.
Our guest is Thomas Moore. He's a psychotherapist, a former monk, and his latest book is A Religion of One's Own, a guide to creating a personal spirituality in a secular world. Thomas, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob.
Well, this idea of putting together our own religion, our own spiritual system, it sounds kind of radical, maybe even sacrilegious to some people. Can you talk about what first set you down this road and how people have reacted so far?
I've been thinking about this for a long time. It was at the end of his life that Thomas Merton, the Catholic monk, said that it's time to stop relying on the structures around us and go on it on our own and create our own spiritual way. And so it's been around a while, this idea. I see a lot of people, talk to a lot of people who are either kind of succumbing to the secular explanations for life today, a lot of brain studies and scientific studies that are wonderful in themselves, but don't deal with the spiritual very well. And so it seems to me that people can find a way without going back to traditions and formal practices that they don't want anymore. There are ways of being religious today that just take a little imagination.
You spent 12 years as a monk, but you say that in this point of your life, 40 years or so later, you feel more religious now than ever. Why is that?
Yes, I feel more Catholic than when I was a monk. Yes, I do. I have been exploring religion all these years. I eventually got a PhD in the study of religion. And so as part of that, I studied many different religious traditions. And the study of them had a big impact on me. Sometimes I call myself a Zen Catholic these days, although I probably don't fit into either category terribly well. But I have learned a lot from all these religious traditions, and I think that we can have a different approach to them today. I think in the past we thought you had to be a member, so you had to choose which religion will I belong to. I think today what we can do is say that these traditions have a lot to offer us. Each of them has a lot to offer us, and we don't have to sample them superficially. We can actually really get into them and see what they have to offer. And over time, we can develop from all of that experience, develop our own approach to being religious.
It sounds like a lot of work in some ways. So if someone wants to explore this idea and say, yes, I want to establish my own personal religion or religion of my own, how do I start?
Well, you know, first of all, your point that it's a lot of work, people are already doing quite a bit of work, and they're doing it with a considerable anxiety. I mean, this idea of searching, you know, being a seeker is not always so pleasant. It's kind of painful for a lot of people. But I think that the way you do it, you can start by exploring some of the great religious art or the religious texts that are around and so easy to get to today. One that I often recommend people do looking at is the Tao Te Ching, or the Tao Te Ching from China. It's very short. It's less than 100 pages. And you can read it thoughtfully and meditatively. I do it several times a year. And it gives you a point of view on life, how to be, that you won't find anywhere else. And then you can look at other sources. You can read some wonderful Sufi poetry. A lot of people like Rumi today. And if you do that seriously, not just dip into it, but really, really take some time with it, then these various experiences will leave a mark on you. You don't have to be, you know, get a PhD like I did. You get a good sampling of the various religious traditions, and you'd be surprised how quickly you change and shift and how much you learn.
It seems like a big urge driving your work is the idea that we shouldn't separate out daily life over here and religion in that church building or temple over there, and trying to incorporate our personal religion, whatever form it takes, into our daily lives and our daily awareness. How important is that?
Well, yes, that's really at the heart of it. I learned that when I was a monk all those many years ago. I was taught in those days that the work I did, whether it was outside pruning trees, by the way, I was in Wisconsin doing that. I was pruning trees and cleaning up the building or cleaning bathrooms even, all that kind of thing. I was taught that was my religious work, that was part of my religion to do that. And, you know, to pray is to, or to work is to pray, they would say. And, you know, that really made a lot of sense to me because it helped me put together my everyday life with my my religious life. And it taught me that everything, when you look at it deeply enough, everything is sacred. Everything touches on a level that is meaningful and that ties into the most important values in the world around us. And I think that really is a good base for being religious. You can do that whether you're going to a church, you're involved in a formal religion or not. I think you can have your own religion in either case. But especially for people who are seekers today, I think this is a good approach.
You mentioned to work is to pray. Also, I think I read to walk is to pray. You quote somebody saying that we should walk like an elephant to harness our spirituality or engage with it. How does that work?
Well, that was a Zen master, Shunryu Suzuki. He was a wonderful teacher, and he had some very strong images like that, to walk like an elephant. I think what he meant was that that when you walk, when you do anything, really, that you do it deliberately and patiently and not too quickly, and you feel your own weight as you go. I mean, that's a big thing, too, I think, about the elephant. You feel your weight so that I think a lot of people, when they approach religion, especially formal religion, they don't have their own weight at all. They feel that this church or organization or the leader, whoever it is, has a lot more to offer, and you have to submit to that. In this religion of your own, you take on the responsibility, but you also take on the pleasure and the joy of finding your own way and finding religious and spiritual practices that suit you as a person, as an individual.
Now, I imagine somebody who's a follower of a particular formal, traditional religious tradition may be thinking, this all sounds a bit squishy. I follow a religion that has divinely inspired precepts, ideas, and I can't pick and choose among them. It's not my choice to make. How would you answer somebody coming from that angle?
Well, I can certainly appreciate that. I was living in that world for a long time. And I don't mean to take that away. I think that's how you feel, that's really wonderful. If you have that certainty and if you have that backing, that's fine. But I do think that for too long we have surrendered ourselves, that we haven't really put ourselves into the equation. I'm always quoting Emerson, who said that every church has a membership of one. You know, that even though you have all these people that are members of these churches, in the end, it's really the individual has to do it and decide what to believe, what not to believe, and how to practice and how not to practice. So what I'm doing here is not really challenging any of those beliefs or the authorities or the revelations, whatever they are. Not at all. I mean, really respect those. But I do think that it's time to stop being so passive about it. And as a matter of fact, I'm a psychotherapist, and I've written about sadomasochism in the past, and I think there's a way in which, in religion, people tend to be masochistic. That is, they give themselves up too readily and too easily, and they don't feel that weight of themselves. They don't feel that that they are the creator of their own religion.
At the opposite end of the spectrum, suppose an atheist is listening or reading your book saying, wait, does having my own religion, even if I'm defining it, does that mean I have to embrace something supernatural, something that I don't believe in by an atheistic nature?
You know, what I'm talking about is not really belief. It's not. That's an old way of thinking, I think, about religion, where we think, what do you believe, what do I believe, and compare them and see which is best. That's not really, I think, the heart of it. The heart of it is not belief so much as how you are in the world and how you see the world you live in, how your everyday life goes. Can you really perceive, let's say, an obvious thing, the sacredness in nature? Can you really, you know, is that part of your life? The natural world can be a really essential part of a person's spiritual life. Or what about the arts? The arts, too, in our secular world don't really have much place. But in tradition, they were very closely associated with religion, and I think we can return to that. So maybe meditating, listening to music, developing a taste for music and for the visual arts, that also can be woven into your spiritual practice. And so then the religion is not so much about belief. You can have your beliefs, whatever they are, if they're important to you. It's more about the practice and who you are as a human being as a result of your point of view.
We're talking with Thomas Moore. His new book is A Religion of One's Own. It's about how to create a set of spiritual beliefs that works for you, engages you with your spirituality on a daily basis. What do you think about this idea? Have you tried bringing spirituality into your daily life in some way? Do you like this idea of picking and choosing from different traditions and philosophies, art, and music, as we'll get into in a minute? Give a call, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email, talk@wpr.org. We're talking with Thomas Moore about finding our own sets of spiritual beliefs, building a religion of one's own. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about his idea? If you're someone who follows an organized religion, what do you make of it? Or if you don't, does this idea of putting together your own spiritual beliefs, maybe inspired by the religions of the world, does this appeal to you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll get your calls in just a moment. But first, Thomas, you touched on this briefly. Reaching outside of religious and spiritual traditions and being inspired by art as well as music and literature. Why is that important?
Well, I guess the one way to get at that is to tell you that when I was studying religion, doing my doctoral studies, we had a division of that study called Religion and Literature. That was really important to me because we got rid of that line that separates secular from sacred literature. So I was very interested in reading certain playwrights, like Samuel Beckett was really important for me then, Emily Dickinson. People who were poets who would not be associated with a particular religion, but whose poetry and literature writings, plays, raise questions of meaning and belief and faith and trust and the very core of your life and where you find inspiration and direction. So we didn't make that distinction so much between sacred and secular. So what I'm suggesting here for anyone else is that trying to offer all different resources that you can have as you develop your own spiritual life, making up your own religion, that you can also turn to the so-called secular arts, but look at them with this intention, with this different point of view, that this is not entertainment, that these arts and these artists are really trying to probe what human life is all about at such a level that they have equal weight, or at least they have something serious to offer to the search for a spiritual meaning in your own life.
We'll go to our callers now. We have Roxanne with us in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Roxanne, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask you if you have looked into Ekankar. It has helped me immensely develop my own religion. Ekankar is something very serious to me. I'll spell it. It's Ekankar. And it began ancient Eastern religion, and it's, like I said, it's just been spiritually very important to me. I thought I'd just pass it on.
All right, thanks for the call, Roxanne.
Roxanne, thank you. I know a lot of people, many, many people, who have turned to Eastern sources, you know, to find an alternative. Especially, I think the East is valuable because the point of view is very rich and deep, and it's different from what goes on in the West, where we tend to emphasize sort of an intellectual belief. And in the East, it's more of a question of being, you know, of who you are, and being changed by by the things that you study and the practices that you have. My family, for example, my wife and daughter are Sikhs. That is, they practice Kundalini Yoga very seriously, and it's a very important part of their religious way. It's not mine at all, so we're very different that way. But I think that that the Ekankar is an example of of finding something that appeals to you, and I think it's a very individual thing. Somebody else may not be moved so much by it, but you can spread the word, and people can say, "Well, I want to give that a try."
Roxanne, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Peter in Cedarburg. Peter, hi.
Oh, hi. I wanted to call in. I agree with your speaker. It's not so much your belief, that you get bogged down with, but what kind of daily spiritual practice you have that really changes you as a human being in the present moment. And I'd also like to add, books like the last caller Eckhart, I really enjoyed quite a bit and found a lot of insight and inspiration. But I think one also needs to find a teacher sometimes if they want to explore a certain path. They're not going to knock on your door and say, "Gee whiz, would you like to be my student?" So, folks have to put some effort into, a spiritual practice that they're interested in learning more about and take it from there, I think.
Peter, thanks for the call. And Thomas, what do you think of that idea of seeking out a mentor or a teacher?
Well, yes, I think that helps a great deal. It's one of the old, very ancient ways of developing your spiritual life, to have a teacher. I wouldn't want to literalize it too much. In all the things I'm suggesting in this book, I'm suggesting that you take some of these old ways, but you make them your own and bring them up to date. And I know for me, I began reading the psychology of Carl Jung when I was probably in my mid-30s, maybe a little before then. And he became a mentor for me, even though I never met him. His work and especially his writing about his own spiritual path, which was very rich and very informed, and came from all over the world, from traditions all over the world. And he was very active in taking these traditions and making them his own and going deeply into them. And that affected me a great deal. So what I'm saying is that sometimes your teacher may not be somebody that you go and physically link up with, but you may discover through their writing or in other ways that they appeal to you and can take you to that deep place.
Peter, thanks for the call. We've got Rich in Sauk County with us now. Rich, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, I would like to just relate a little story that I was Catholic for 60 some odd years of 67 years total, and our youngest son is gay, and we struggle with that in our Catholic religion and the fact that he was gay and the Catholic religion, their opinion of gay people. And about 5, 6, 7 years ago, we just cut the ties, period. We wrote a letter to our pastor and said, we can't handle this anymore. And then I started to read, and I had a book from Richard Dawkins, who was an avowed atheist, and several other books of evolution of God, and et cetera, some of them were pretty heavy lifts, just to try to get a handle on it. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I tell people is I'm not an atheist, I'm not an agnostic. What bothers me about people's concept of God, or what puts a kink in it for me, is the mainstream religions that they turn me off in, and some of them are good and they do a lot of good things, but it's a lot of hypocrisy.
All right, Rich, thanks a lot for sharing your story. And Thomas, that sounds like the clash between making your life conform to your former religion or wrapping your religion around the reality of your life a little bit.
Yes, I think so. One of the issues, there's so much we could talk about there, and so many people would have a similar story. But one of the issues is that a lot of people, have an understanding of their religion that is directly from their childhood. We don't teach religion at a high level very much. Equal to other fields. Our studies of science and math go shoot up into college, but it's very difficult to get a good education in the spiritual realm. And so a lot of people are rather, you know, in a child fantasy or a kind of not exactly having that elephant weight of their adulthood as they go along. And so they run up against the authority and the teachings of a church or a tradition that they just can't buy, and so they leave the tradition. Instead of maybe causing some change or shaping that religion, deciding, I'm not going to leave it if I really want it, but I'm going to have to make some decisions. I can buy 90% of it, but 10% I just can't, and I'm going to go ahead and take what I need from it, but not that 10%. So there are different ways of dealing with it, but I wish that we could be more adult in relationship to it and not follow so in such a weak manner that we often do.
Before we're done, can you briefly tell us what's the benefit? If we do this, we build a religion of our own, what do we get out of it?
Well, what you get out of it is the very deep satisfaction. This is at the end of my book. I talk about bliss. We get not a superficial happiness or a solving of the problems of life, but you live at a much deeper level. You are in touch with the eternal and timeless matters that are with us no matter what, like having to deal with a serious illness or divorce or our children being in trouble. These are mysterious, profound things that come to us, and they cannot be resolved entirely by psychology and by sociology. They require a vision that's very deep and strong and big. And so I think that developing a religiousness of your own can help you live in a way that's profoundly satisfying.
Thomas, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Thomas Moore. His new book is A Religion of One's Own.